It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from Signal Hill here in beautiful Kodiak, Alaska, where it's up to 21 degrees here at the station. Mostly sunny skies today. We're looking for a high near 27, northwest wind 10. For tonight, a 40% chance of snow, mainly after 3 a.m., increasing clouds tonight with a low around 18 and northwest winds to 10, should go to the west. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak may have one more seaweed farm. The Department of Defense is commemorating its completion of the Clear Space Force Station radar system. The federal government is inching toward an oil and gas lease sale in Cook Inlet. And Bristol Bay has been very cold. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The parents of the Michigan teenager charged with Tuesday's mass shooting at Oxford High School are now facing charges of their own. Alex McLennan of member station WDET reports James and Jennifer Crumbly each face four counts of involuntary manslaughter.
Oakland County Prosecutor Karen McDonald says the gun used in the shooting appears to have been purchased as a gift 4 days prior. She says the parents are facing the most severe charges prosecutors can prove without a doubt.
And I am by no means saying that an active shooter situation should always result in a criminal prosecution against parents. But the facts of this case are so egregious.
McDonald says the parents were notified of suspicious activity twice, including when their son was caught searching for gun ammo on his phone during class the day before the shooting. She says prosecutors uncovered a message from Jennifer Crumbly to her son after the incident saying, "You have to learn to not get caught." For NPR News, I'm Alex McLennan in Detroit.
The couple's 15-year-old son is accused of killing four students and wounding several other people. He's being charged as an adult with murder, attempted murder, and terrorism. The Justice Department is investigating sexual harassment claims against former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. NPR's Quill Lawrence reports Cuomo denies the allegations.
The Department of Justice would not comment on the investigation, which was revealed because the state of New York has hired a law firm to handle matters related to former Governor Cuomo. One of those is a civil inquiry by the Department of Justice into sexual harassment. Cuomo resigned last summer after New York State Attorney General Letitia James released a report alleging 11 cases where he sexually harassed women. Cuomo denies the accusations, but has apologized for what he calls attempts at humor or affection. Cuomo claims the report was politically motivated by James, who is now running for governor. Quill Lawrence, NPR News, New York.
Stocks have closed lower, the Nasdaq ending down nearly 2% hours after the Labor Department released November's report showing a slowdown in job growth. Private businesses and other employers added 210,000 jobs. It's the weakest monthly gain in nearly a year. But President Biden praised the one-year decline in another part of the jobs report, the unemployment rate, which has fallen to 4.2%.
This year, we can reflect on an extraordinary bit of progress. Our economy is markedly stronger than it was a year ago. And today, the incredible news that our unemployment rate has fallen to 4.2%. At this point in the year, we're looking at the sharpest one-year decline in unemployment ever.
The jobs report reflecting a slowdown before the highly mutated Omicron variant of coronavirus was detected in the U.S. Now several states are reporting cases of the virus, most recently in Nebraska. Biden signed a short-term government funding bill that averts a shutdown. It keeps federal agencies funded through mid-February. This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
In the not-so-distant future, the waters off Kodiak Island may find itself host to another seaweed farm. On Tuesday, the Department of Natural Resources announced the comment period for a proposed 10-year lease of a 14-acre kelp farm. The lease was requested by Chloe Ivanoff, Haley Thompson, and Clifton Ivanoff, doing business as Kelp Island, Alaska. The farm would be east of Holiday Island, less than a mile from the city. Chloe Ivanoff grew up in Kodiak in a fishing family. She studied aquaculture in a class put on by Alaska Sea Grant last spring.
There's a lot we have to learn about it. I think because it's so new, there's a couple farms in Alaska, but as is, it's pretty small. So it's kind of the information that's out there is often word of mouth and who you know.
According to Ivanoff, the kelp would likely be for sale to an in-state buyer who would process it and sell it in different seafood products. That's a common strategy for other local kelp farms. There's time yet to go before the kelp farm is actually a reality. After the public comment period, there is a final finding and decision is reached by the Department of Natural Resources. After that, there's an appeal period during which concerned citizens or the potential farmers can appeal. The process would take a bare minimum of 2 months. The public comment period closes 5 p.m. January 3rd. Brent Reynolds, a natural resource specialist for the Department of Natural Resources, says that Kodiak is at the center of a growing community of Alaska seaweed farmers.
The increase is very similar to other areas within South Central. In the last few years, there has been a definite increase of interest for aquatic farms, for requests for information about aquatic farms, the application process, the overall process of what goes into it, and especially within the Kodiak Island area, as well as throughout South Central.
If approved, the farm would join 6 existing seaweed farms in the Kodiak Island area. 4 of those are in the vicinity of the city of Kodiak. A copy of the Department of Natural Resources notice and information on how to submit a public comment can be found on the KMXT website. The U.S. Missile Defense Agency on Monday will commemorate completion of construction of an advanced radar system at Clear Space Force Station. The $1.5 billion long-range discrimination radar will improve the military's ability to track ballistic missiles and other objects in space. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
After months of delays caused mainly by the pandemic, the Missile Defense Agency will officially unveil the Long Range Discrimination Radar, or LRDR, in a Monday morning event at the former Air Force Station at Clear. Space Force Lieutenant Colonel Bill Hassey is the installation commander, and he said in an interview last summer that the LRDR will greatly improve Clear's ability to carry out its 3 main missions.
Missile warning, missile defense, and space domain awareness.
Space domain awareness includes tracking junk that's floating around in near-Earth orbit, says Major David Kim, the operations director for the 13th Space Warning Squadron at Clear. That would include the 1,500 or so chunks of debris left over from a Russian satellite that nation destroyed last month in a test of its anti-satellite system.
We are keeping track of objects in space, as well as the missile defense mission.
The Missile Defense Agency says once the LRDR is fully operational, it'll be able to search, track, and discriminate many types and sizes of objects in space. The agency says that'll include dummy warheads and other decoys that incoming enemy missiles may deploy to distract radars and enable real warheads to escape detection. A news release issued by the agency on Monday says the LRDR will be able to detect all types of ballistic missiles from farther away, including, in later iterations, new generation hypersonic missiles. The radar's data will better enable interceptor missiles like those at the base at Fort Greely to knock down warheads. Monday's event at Clear marks the beginning of the initial fielding phase of the LRDR that'll include more testing and fine-tuning of the system and training for its operators. That phase is expected to be completed in the fall of 2023, according to a report issued last year by the Government Accountability Office. The Missile Defense Agency will then transfer the LRDR to the Space Force, which will operate and maintain the facility. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Bristol Bay just had its coldest November in the last 80 years. Areas across the region broke daily and monthly records.
This is going to be by far the coldest November of record at King Salmon. In fact, it's going to be so cold that if this were December, it would be a top 10 coldest December.
That's University of Alaska Fairbanks climate scientist Rick Tauman. Saturday's temperatures in King Salmon dropped to negative 28 degrees, which tied an all-time record for November. In Dillingham, the temperature hit negative 21 degrees.
And while we don't have as good a climate records for Dillingham as we do for King Salmon, it sure looks like this is the lowest November temperature in Dillingham since 1963.
Dillingham set another record early Monday morning with wind chills at negative 41 degrees. That's the lowest November wind chill for the area in the past 50 years. Tauman says that weather patterns in the Bering Sea have directed storms south of the Aleutian Islands and the eastern Gulf of Alaska. That's kept a cold northerly wind blowing across the western part of the state.
As a result, most places have not had very much snow, and the cold has hung in. And it's really the stability of that pattern. It's not like cold snaps in November don't occur, but they're often punctuated then by Bering Sea storms that come along and warm things up. Not this year.
The cold air helped create positive sea ice growth in the Bering Sea and Bristol Bay. Tauman says that this early season sea ice growth is the best it's been since 2012.
And that, of course, will also contribute to the potential for cold weather. Now, of course, if we were to go into a sustained warm pattern, especially in Bristol Bay, that ice could get eaten away. But we're off to a much better start than we have been in 9 years.
According to NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, temperatures will likely lean below average for the Bristol Bay region through February. La Nina conditions at the Pacific equator are also supporting high-pressure systems over the Bering Sea, which means those cold northerly winds should continue for the region over the next 3 months. The federal government is inching toward an oil and gas lease sale in Cook Inlet, covering about 1 million acres from the southern end of Calgon Island down to Augustine Island. As KDLL's Sabine Pooks reports, there's a different kind of sale in progress in Soldotna.
Caitlin Vodla, Regional Director for Cook Inlet Keeper, explains.
I was talking with other fellow artists, all of whom live around the Cook Inlet, and we were talking about this issue, and we're like, what can we do about this? And so we had the idea to sort of symbolically cancel the lease sale in place of an art sale.
Vodla and four other artists are printing their art on cards and selling them in packs over the next 2 weeks to raise awareness about the pending sale. She's hoping art is a way to engage more people in what can be a convoluted public process.
To be honest, it was kind of a response to just the busyness and fullness of life. There's so many things to pay attention to, and I felt like this was a little bit in the weeds, you know? It's a comment period for a federal lease sale number 258. Put on by the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, and it's a draft environmental impact statement, and you can comment on it this way, and it's just like, blah.
The sale, called Lease Sale 258, is a pending auction of over 200 blocks in Cook Inlet to oil and gas companies. The sale's been on again, off again. The Biden administration halted the process leading up to the auction earlier this year, part of a larger executive order aimed at fighting climate change. But the leasing process resumed this summer when a Louisiana judge ordered programs to resume in Cook Inlet and in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, the feds are soliciting public comment on a draft environmental impact statement on the sale. Inlet Keeper has been encouraging people to sign letters against the sale for its potential impacts on Cook Inlet. Art, Vodla says, is another avenue for involvement. In the past, peninsula painters and fisher poets have used art to draw attention to the fight over pebble mine. These artists, too, live on the peninsula and have their own connections to the inlet, like Valisa Higman. She's a paper cut artist based out of Saldovia, where she's also a member of the local oil spill response team. That team was born out of the Exxon Valdez oil spill.
Which is kind of my earliest memory. I believe I was about 9, so like the first time anything outside of my immediate experience really impacted me in that way.
Higman says she's concerned about how more oil and gas development in the inlet could impact wildlife. And wildlife is the focus of her work. Colorful cuts of paper that show a sea otter wrapped in kelp set against Mount Illiamna.
We have a very healthy population of sea otters in Soldovia Bay, and you get a lot of close interactions with them. I get to know them pretty well because I'm out in my rowboat all the time. But it's not just otters. Like, I think about all the seabirds, and there's so much wildlife in this area that's so special and unique, and all of those animals would be impacted.
The other artists who submitted work are Bonnie Bernard of Sterling, Amy Cruz of Kisilov, and Liz Maring of Homer. Kenai printer Hannah Parker is printing the cards, which will be sold online and at the Cook Inlet Keeper Community Action Studio in Soldotna. Sales are submitted as donations to Inlet Keeper. Vadla says they're timing the art sale with the public comment period for the oil and gas sale.
The comment period for it ends December 13th, this in 2 Mondays at 7:59 p.m. So that is the exact time that we're closing our art sale to remind folks to submit a comment to BOEM if they haven't already.
A lease sale in Cook Inlet is not guaranteed. The federal bureau that oversees offshore leasing has canceled sales in the past due to lack of industry interest. Vadla says she thinks public opinion could be a powerful tool to sway the feds.
Local folks' observations and knowledge of our home, this place, Cook Inlet, is really critical to get the whole picture of what would be impacted if there was spill, if there were more development in Cook Inlet.
You can buy prints and see some of the originals on display at the Cook Inlet Keeper Community Action Studio on the Kenai Spur Highway. They're also available for purchase on the Cook Inlet Keeper website. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Providing every Alaskan with a high-speed internet connection is a challenge, considering the state's far-flung geography and extreme weather. But a new federal infrastructure law has $1.5 billion for broadband in Alaska, and that will help the state reach its goal. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman has this report.
A lot of money will be coming into Alaska in the next few years to expand broadband, more than the state has seen before.
Well, I think it's a huge opportunity for, you know, connectivity.
That's Hallie Bissett. She chaired Governor Mike Dunleavy's task force on broadband. It just wrote a report that will help the state decide how to spend that $1.5 billion. Bissett says the first step will be to connect communities using satellites.
We have so many villages that are still not even getting, basic service.
Eventually, the goal is to replace the satellites in some communities with fiber optic cables. One of the hoops the state must pass through is to establish a new broadband office. Bissett says the office will be important to making sure all broadband money is spent effectively. It will take some time for the new federal infrastructure money to reach communities. First, the federal government must map existing internet connections down to individual buildings. That will take at least a year. Bissett says the best guess now is that it will take up to 10 years to connect the entire state with broadband. One area where broadband can make a difference is in schools. State Education Commissioner Michael Johnson served on the task force, and he says broadband access is essential to students.
You can teach well without technology, but technology extends the benefit of access to content. And as I've always said, technology extends the benefit of a great teacher to more and more kids.
Dunleavy now must decide what to do with the task force's recommendations. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. OBI launches earth-friendly packaging, and crab shells offer even more solutions. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
OBI Seafoods, which operates 10 processing plants in Alaska, has met its goal for 100% recyclable packaging on all of its canned salmon brands. All cans, lids, labels, holding trays, and shrink wrap are included, and any plastics used contain at least 30% recyclable materials. The company is committed to ensuring that its packaging has the lowest possible impact on the planet, said CEO Mark Palmer, and will help their customers reach their sustainability goals. The move into recyclable packaging also means OBI's canned products are exempt from a new overseas tax in the UK on single-use plastics that goes into effect next April. OBI is phasing out its old stock and will switch to the new packaging at the start of the new year. Meanwhile, packaging made from chitin, that multi-use substance found in crab shells, has caught the eye of investors. Cruise Foam, a packaging company in California, has attracted $2.5 million in seed money to begin producing fully compostable packages to replace petroleum-based styrofoam at a similar price. The crab shell-based material provides the same strength and protective properties, but features a nearly 98% average compostable breakdown with no adverse effects to the soil. Cruise Foam said in a press release they're taking on plastic pollution at the root by inventing a versatile, earth-compatible product that requires no recycling and will help set the standard for the future of packaging and sustainable materials. Find links at AlaskaFishRadio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, who salutes and says thanks to the men and women fishing across Alaska for their hard work and dedication. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the third day of November, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 9:32. It will set again at 4:26. That will give us 6 hours and 54 minutes of daylight, a loss of 2 minutes and 35 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 47 degrees. That was set in 2011. And a record low was 1 degree set in 1968. Currently, 22 degrees outside the station here, and we're looking for sunny skies with a high near 24, northwest wind to 5 miles per hour, 40% chance of snow tonight, mainly after 3 a.m., increasing clouds tonight with a temperature rising to about 23 by 5 a.m., northwest wind to 10 miles per hour, becoming light after midnight. For Saturday, chance of snow before 3 p.m., then isolated snow showers after 3 p.m., mostly cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 30. Northwest wind to 10. And partly cloudy skies tomorrow night with a low around 22 and west winds to 10. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up in just a few minutes here on the east side at 12:28. 5 minutes from now, that will be an 11-foot tide. The next low tide at 7:19 this evening will be a minus tide, a minus 2-foot tide. Our high tide after that will be at 11:47 a.m. and be 8 feet, and our low tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will be at 7:01 a.m. and be 2.1 feet. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 1:06 p.m. That will be a 17.3-foot tide in Larsen Bay. That will be followed by a low tide at 7:51 p.m. of minus 3.7 feet. Your next high tide will be at 2:09 a.m. and be 14.2 feet, and your morning low tide on the west side will be at 7:49 a.m. and be 2.4 feet. Mariners, here's your weather. From Marmot Island to Sitkanak, we have a small craft advisory for Saturday. Northwest 20 today, seas to 6 feet with freezing spray. For tomorrow, variable 15, becoming north 25 tomorrow afternoon, north of Dangerous Cape. Variable 10, becoming north 15 knots in the afternoon, seas to 4 feet. In the Shelikof, we have a heavy freezing spray warning for today. Northwest 20, becoming variable 10 this afternoon, gusts to 30 knots out of bays and passes, seas to 3 feet with heavy freezing spray. For tomorrow, variable 15, seas to 3 feet. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a work session on Tuesday, December 7th, next Tuesday. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. Elected officials may be participating via audio-video conferencing. Public members are encouraged to tune in here on KMXT at 100.1 FM. The meeting will also be web-streamed, and the web-streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. For those who wish to request printed meeting materials or have questions regarding the meeting, please contact the clerk's office at 486-8636. Well, next Thursday, the Kodiak City Council will be having a regular council meeting. That's Thursday, December 9th. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. and be held in the library's multipurpose room. Elected officials may be participating via audio-video conferencing. Public members are encouraged to tune in to 100.1 FM. The meeting will also be web-streamed, and the web-streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. Call the clerk for more information at 486-8636. The Ports and Harbor Advisory Board will be holding a meeting on Friday. That's happening at 12 p.m., 12 noon, at Fisherman's Hall. Public participation for this meeting is both in-person and virtual. That's next Friday, not today. Agendas and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. For more information, call the Harbor Department at 486-8080. The Board of Education regular meeting that was scheduled for Monday, December 13th, has been rescheduled for Monday, December 6th, next Monday. Senior citizens of Kodiak and Kodiak Area Transit System are happy to announce that the annual Christmas Light Tour is back. The light tour will be held December 17th at 6 p.m. Just be at the center front door by 5:45 p.m. and the tour will begin at 6. Space is limited, so give them a call at the center at 486-6181 and they'll get you on the list. The holidays just got a little brighter with the return of this annual event. Masks are required. Coming up December 15th, the Sing-Along, a global Christmas brought to you by KMXT and the Kodiak Island Children's Christmas Concert. Everyone is invited to gather the family and raise your voices in song. Tune in at KMXT at 7 p.m. December 15th and sing from your living room, front porch, anywhere you want. Song list and lyrics are available on the Kodiak Island Borough School District website. Start singing and practicing right now. Well, if you were born in 1957, you're eligible for Medicare starting in January. There were over 4 million babies born in 57, making this the largest number of baby boomers born in 1 year. You have a 7-month initial enrollment period when you turn 65 to sign up for Medicare, 3 months before your 65th birthday, the month of your birth, and 3 months after. This initial enrollment period is very important, even if you still plan to work and have employer-based insurance. Please contact the Senior Center at 486-6181 for more information concerning this important information. As part of a traditional foods initiative, Chiniak Bay Elder House is requesting wild game donations from the Kodiak community. Their elders are thankful for opportunities to eat wild, nourishing local fish and game. Just drop them off at the Kodiak Island Smokehouse. For more information, call Kelsey at 481-2488.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.